from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Last night at the University of Denver, President Barack Obama and GOP challenger Mitt Romney stepped into the ring with each other for the first presidential debate focusing on domestic issues. Mitt Romney was quick to broadly attack the president's record on deficit reduction, job creation, and the green energy companies he chose to subsidize.
I had a friend who said you don't just pick the winners and losers, you pick the losers. All right? This is not the kind of policy you want to have. You want to get America energy secure.
In a policy-heavy debate that verged on the wonky, Obama attacked Romney's tax proposals and criticized the former governor for being secretive with his plans for the economy. But many viewers found the president's performance lackluster. Join us for analysis after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. In this opening forum hour, we discuss in depth last night's debate, the first of three presidential debates at the University of Denver featuring President Barack Obama, the Democratic candidate for president, the incumbent, and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, the Republican candidate. The debate, which focused on domestic issues, lasted an hour and a half and was moderated by Jim Lehrer of PBS. Two more presidential debates and a debate between vice presidential candidates, incumbent Joe Biden and Paul Ryan, are scheduled to follow. And in this morning's opening forum hour, we discussed last night's debate with three veteran political analysts. With us here in studio is Bill Whalen, research fellow for the Hoover Institution. Welcome, Bill.
Hi, Michael.
And we'll also say good morning to Joe Tooman, who's also with us here this morning, professor of political and legal communications at San Francisco State and author of Political Communication in American Campaigns.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Joe. We're also expecting George Lakoff to get here any moment. He was fighting the Bay Bridge traffic, but he's Richard and Rhoda Goldman Distinguished Professor of Cognitive Science and Linguistics at UC Berkeley, author most recently of The Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide to Thinking and Talking Democratic. Well, Joe Tooman, now that we're getting all the analysis from all the would-be pundits and the pundits out there, they're saying that it was a clear victory for Mitt Romney, I suppose because he came out much more aggressively and because the president, perhaps in trying to be presidential, came out a little, well, I've heard words like lackadaisical. The word that came to my mind, honestly, was insouciant, but that's a $10 word to begin with. I mean, he was simply not really fighting back as people would have expected him to.
The impression I had, and I know our Bay Area audience doesn't want to hear this, but the president had an off night last night. And if you're judging this on the performance of the two people in the debate, Mitt Romney clearly was definitively a victor last night. He won on the performance. He won on the presentation of issues. I'm not saying that the president's arguments were wrong. I'm just saying he didn't advocate very well for them. And he was a little bit scattered. He gave the impression of an athlete who hasn't trained for an event going against another athlete who's done a lot of training, and you saw the results, and that typically happens with incumbent presidents who run unopposed. And in this case, let's remember that the president hasn't done any debates for a long time, and Mitt Romney just came through a grueling primary process where his
50
own
hours
party,
of televised debates.
That's right, and he was beat up worse, frankly, by people in his own party than anything the Obama people are throwing at him now. So he's battle trained and a little quicker on all the issues, and knows the facts a little bit better, and clearly put more effort into this. And last night, honestly, he wanted it more, it seemed like, than the president did. The president was a little unfocused. Now, having said all that, I think you're going to see a different Barack Obama on the 16th, I think, is the next debate. It's a different format.
He's going to come out fighting.
Town hall.
There's no question.
Yeah,
that,
and I don't know. So I don't know that this will matter more than to say that Mitt Romney won the debate last night, and it'll probably help him in some respects.
Well, but he also had to come off as sounding authentic and being a real guy. People kept talking about robotic qualities of Romney. He had to sound more human. You think he achieved that?
To a degree, I think he did, and he had. I mean, there were some moments where he tried to. I guess they had been prepping him for zingers, and people were asking me about this yesterday. And I always say that I've trained people for debates before. You can't teach people to do things that they're not natural at, and I don't think that Romney's very good at spontaneous humor. The best moment maybe was the Big Bird thing and looking at Lehrer.
Nice moment when he congratulated the president
sure.
on his anniversary,
and that was kind of spontaneous. But by and large, he's a little plastic and wooden as a speaker. But last night he was okay. And the thing that I think has been his biggest failing, Michael, really in this campaign up to this point, is that he has not exercised message discipline. His only argument, his only card in this game is employment. And he's been distracted talking about Medicare, about Libya, going to England and telling the British they don't know how to do the Olympics, how to win friends and influence people, and instead of talking about jobs. That's his best argument. Last night, from the very first moment, he stayed on message with that. And even when he was talking about
it, it was the first thing they asked about.
I mean, yeah, but he didn't get distracted. And even when he talked about other things, he brought it back to jobs. I think that's his strength. And if he's going to have a chance in this election, and he's got a chance, that's the message he has to stay on. And that's something he hasn't done to this point.
Well, let's hear Governor Romney actually criticizing Obamacare, which, by the way, President Obama embraced. He said he's become kind of fond of that word, defending his Massachusetts health care plan.
We didn't raise taxes. You've raised them by $1 trillion under Obamacare. We didn't cut Medicare. Of course, we don't have Medicare, but we didn't cut Medicare by $716 billion. We didn't put in place a board that can tell people ultimately what treatments they're going to receive. We didn't also do something that I think a number of people across this country recognize, which is put people in a position where they're going to lose the insurance they had and they wanted.
Well, Bill Whalen is here with us as well, research fellow for the Hoover Institution and a veteran Republican speechwriter, going back to Governor Pete Wilson and Governor Schwarzenegger. And Romney came out swinging, and the fact of the matter is he came out swinging despite the fact that many say he didn't really have that many specifics. I mean, he was hitting with things, for example, that a lot of people thought Obama could come back on, such as millions of dollars with Medicare money that supposedly wasn't accounted for and wasn't specified. I mean, from your perspective, he won the evening. How much traction did he get from it?
Well, we won't know traction until we see the polls, obviously, in the next few days. But I think he achieved two important things for his campaign last night. Number one, there are Republican donors out there sitting on the fence deciding where to park their money in the last month of the election. And they're not sure if they wanted to go to a presidential campaign that was floundering, to congressional races here in California, put it into ballot initiatives. Romney's performance last night probably makes him feel better about giving to his campaign. Secondly, he gets the media office back for a week or two until the next debate. Romney has suffered terrible press going back, as Joe mentioned, prior to his trip to London. And he's been in the ditch ever since. Now he has positive media for the first time, and we can see if he generates momentum out of that. But, you know, it's funny. I worked on the Bush campaign in 1992 for the elder George Bush, and you could see with Obama last night what Bush went through in 1992 as well. President Obama did not look at his watch like George Bush did.
But he kept looking down and taking notes, and I was wondering, what was he taking notes for? Because he didn't come back with something that seemed responsive.
He just looked like a guy who didn't want to be there. It's funny. He said the day before the debate, he called debate prep a drag. And I thought he was just trying to channel Mick Jagger or just try to just be clever and just sort of downplay the whole thing. But he really just did not look like he was enjoying the evening. And it's, you know, sure, no incumbent president enjoys being out there with a challenger. They tend to look down upon their challengers in a rather condescending way. But, you know, geez, fake it for an hour and a half if you have to.
Well, maybe he wanted that private time with his wife. I mean, Romney had a good joke there, didn't he?
Yeah, the funny thing was he didn't look like a guy who was happy about it. So he looked like a guy who had forgotten it was anniversary and was thinking, my goodness, my wife's going to clobber me after this.
Do you think, though, Joe Tumman wanted in here, and of course we're eager to hear what George Lakoff has to say about this, but do you think that his whole message was, here's a new path? Is that being essentially bought by? That's what he was selling. There's a new path, and I'm on that new path, and you have to accept me and trust me.
The curious thing about the debate is we so focus on the presentation that we're not really looking at the substance, and I'm not sure if Romney really broke through in terms of the substance side of the campaign, in terms of the clarity he needs, in terms of saying, this is a different direction I want to take the country in. Here is my plan. I'd be very curious to look at focus groups out of this debate and see if undecided voters knew more about Mitt Romney coming out of the debate than they did going into it.
Yeah, let's actually hear what President Obama had to say when he was questioning lack of specifics on Romney's part.
At some point, I think the American people have to ask themselves, is the reason that Governor Romney is keeping all these plans to replace secret because they're too good? Is it because that somehow middle-class families are going to benefit too much from them?
Yeah, well, George Lakoff, that was at least one kind of rejoinder that came from President Obama. But where was 47%? Where was Bain? Where were the tax returns? I mean, we didn't hear any of that from him.
Well, you heard nothing of it, but worse, you didn't hear what this campaign is about. And it's not just about the particular issues. The devils are in the devils in the details, but you didn't hear any devils. And that is crucial. Obama did not come out swinging on moral issues. There's a moral difference, a major moral difference between President Obama and Mitt Romney. President Obama has a view that democracy is based on the idea that people care about each other, that they get together responsibly through the government to provide public facilities for people. That is, to provide the the proverbial roads and bridges, but also public schools and research and food safety and all those things by the hundreds that are provided by citizens paying for this and getting a lot out of it. Getting,
but forgive me, he did touch on that when Jim Lehrer asked about the role of government. He talked about Abe Lincoln, a great Republican, the Transcontinental Railroad, and universities and so forth.
But by then it was over. He needed to do that first. And not only that, he needed to draw the distinction between him and Romney. Romney has said over and over that he views democracy as a system where people have the liberty to pursue their own interests without the responsibility of caring for other people and without other people caring about and helping them. That is, it's all personal responsibility. And he has said it over and over and over. You're on your own. And Obama has said that. It's a you're on your own view. That is not, I don't think Romney would disagree with that, but it's not out there.
Well, you know,
to say it first.
From the way you have actually written in a number of books about the way Republicans frame things, I mean, the right was coming back, taking an excerpt from a speech that President Obama made that said, we're all in this together and you can't necessarily build something yourself. You have to have other people help you. And they took that as a way of kind of undermining. So fearfulness on Obama's part, you think, then, to say those kinds of things because of the attacks from the right?
I think so. I think Obama blew it when he made that speech where he said, you didn't build that. He meant that was all the roads and bridges. And, of course, he could have come back the next day and said, you didn't build that road, you didn't build that bridge, you didn't, build that sewer, you didn't do so-and-so, and made it clear he didn't do that. He didn't come out and say what he meant. And he hasn't said it since. He's been intimidated by it. And that's terrible. Why should the President of the United States be intimidated by something like that, by a misunderstanding and a taking out of context of what he said, without coming back the very next day when he has the bully pulpit and saying what he means? He hasn't said it, but it is the central issue in the campaign.
Well, you would have thought, listening to the debate last night, the central issue was the middle class. I mean, how many times did they mention the middle class?
You notice Romney did not bring up "you didn't build it," just as Obama did not bring up 47%.
Right. Yeah.
This, to me, was one of the ironies of this debate, that Romney probably has never had a better night with conservatives than he did last night when, in fact, if you look at the debate, he was pretty much trying to cling to the middle on issues like education, like issues like government, trying to sound as non-threatening as he could.
Yeah, Joe Tillman, that's right.
I just going to say, I think that one of the oddities last night was that the president seemed at great pains to invoke everybody always in the past has tried to invoke Ronald Reagan's memory. Bill Clinton was the person who was being invoked last night several times by the president, even once by Mitt Romney when I mentioned one of Clinton's budget advisors approving of one of Romney's approaches. And for me, it was reminiscent, the whole thing last night, of the convention speech and that week. And Barack Obama gave a good speech. If I was grading it, I would say it was a B+ speech. But Bill Clinton gave an A+ speech. And as much as Obama wanted to be Clinton, he wasn't. It was obvious the difference after 4 years in the White House I won't say he got a pass in 2008. He was good in 2008. But he wasn't that way this year. Clinton is still awesome as a speaker, and he's a lightning rod for interest and controversy and the rest of it.
Obama's no slouch as a speaker, but
no,
I'm also wondering if Bill Maher sent out these tweets, and he gave $1 million to Obama's campaign. Some of them were actually pretty funny in a ribald way, like Romney's woman away from giving him, putting him down, and giving him a haircut, this kind of stuff. But I wonder, just when we're talking about Obama's oratorical abilities, we're talking about something very different than the skills of a debater.
Right.
And we had Jim Fellows on last week, and you're saying Obama's just not really a good debater.
Well, no, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think he's an okay debater. I've seen him do better. When he's had the experience in 2008 of doing one debate after the other, I remember several that he did with Hillary. And each, by the way, in 2008 required, when he was debating different people, required a different skill set. I thought he was quite good against Hillary Clinton in the primaries in 2008 and okay against John McCain. But my point, just to go back real quickly about Clinton, was you really saw the difference. He not only was not as polished a speaker last night, one of the other things that Clinton possesses as a skill set, that any good debater possesses as a skill set, is just instant recall with facts and statistics and the ability to sort of cross-apply them to what your opponent is saying. Mitt Romney was doing that, clicking off 1, 2, 3. He obviously had studied his debate handbooks, the practice books. The president looked like somebody who kind of had a general plan going in, and to me, he seemed a little annoyed sometimes. And he also forgot there was a split-screen television, so we're watching his reaction when Romney's speaking, and Romney's looking at him, and he's looking down. He forgets that gravity does that funny thing to people over the age of 50. It makes our mouths kind of invert the smile so that even when we think we're in a neutral position, it looks like we're frowning. And when Romney's talking and shaking his head, Obama's looking down, and he looks downcast, and that's sending a different nonverbal message. I'm sure it's not what he intended.
But you should have seen all the things online about how Romney was smirking. I mean, on the one hand, you had Obama looking a little lugubrious in terms of the criticism people were throwing at
Michael,
saying Romney's, and I'm sure it was partisan comments.
One man's smirk is another man's, you know, smile. So
I get that. But if you watched at the end of the debate when the families came up, you could tell that Romney knew he had won that debate when he started hugging his kids and he was closing his eyes and squeezing them like, I did it. And when you're in one of those debates, you know when you've done it. And you could see the same thing in the opposite in the president. He knew he had an off night. That doesn't mean he's going to lose the election, but he had an off
night. What I was going to say about Bill Maher, though, was he said the president needed a teleprompter. And, I mean, it's an unkind remark, but maybe he is too used to using a teleprompter.
He might be, and also, this also might be a case of he's been, sorry for interrupting, George, he's been a little cocoon media-wise this summer also. It's been a lot of softball appearances on The View. It's going to a lot of morning radio shows, no offense, Michael, but, music shows and just kind of stepping in and talking about who he likes in the playoffs and things like that. He's maybe a little out of shape, but let me say something very contrarian as the Republican in the room here. For all my Republican friends who are dancing around and whooping it up today, there's one thing to keep in mind, and that's 1984. If we were sitting here on the morning after the first debate in 1984, we would have talked about Ronald Reagan in a world of hurt, having had a terrible, terrible debate against Walter Mondale, Mondale declaring himself the Louisville Slugger in that debate. And guess what? In the second debate, Reagan turned it around with the famous line about not using, by holding my opponent's, youth against him, and the election was over. So while Romney did have a good night, I think the reality of this election is he has to do it again on October the 16th and again on October the 22nd.
But George Lakoff, a lot of people were describing Obama's performance last night as that of a wonk. Was he too wonky? I mean, was that part of the problem?
That's what the problem was. He was wonky. As soon as you start in on my plan versus your plan and you're the president, you lose. Right, you just lose. And this is something that Reagan understood very well. Reagan understood that most voters are not going to know the difference between the fine details of these plans. Rather, voters are going to vote on the basis of a small number of things. First, values. You say, what are your values? What is important to you? What are your moral values? Second, you need to project empathy. You need to show you care about people and connect with them. You need to be able to say clearly, very, very clearly what you mean. Obama wasn't doing that. He wasn't doing any of it. You need to show that you are authentic, that you are going to do what you say. Obama wasn't convincing about that. You need to project trust. Obama was just being defensive and defending his record, not doing any of the things that you actually must do in a presidential debate. This is not a high school debate or a college debate or an Oxford debate. This is a show.
Don't you also have to project a little of what they call the fire in the belly? And the president
Absolutely.
Just didn't show enough of that last night, and Mitt Romney did.
Absolutely. You have to show that you're enthusiastic, that you're positive, that you care, that you're upbeat, that you're really out there for the people. And he didn't do it.
This has been a challenge for Obama throughout his first term, and it's what I call the American president syndrome, where the left is at all times looking for Andrew Shepard, the Michael Douglas character in the movie who has that scene where he stands up and says, I'm the president. And they're looking for that at Obama, and they were looking for that in the debate last night, and it just wasn't there. And, the analogy that comes to mind, the metaphor, is a prevent defense in football, where you have the lead and your defense kind of gets soft and just plays back. And guess what prevent defenses usually do? They usually prevent your team from winning.
So, could it have hurt Romney, though, as we look back and do this analysis, to have come out as aggressively as he did? I mean, I know that aggressive is being given some high points here by most of those who watch it, but he kind of ran roughshod over Lehrer. Poor Lehrer. I felt badly for him. The format was one of the big failures, as somebody said, of all. But, the sense that I'm Mitt Romney, and you know, I'm taking charge here. A lot of people seem to see that in him,
I don't think that it hurt him. Look, he started the day behind. They both lowered expectations. Romney had to show up and have a pulse, and he would be deemed to have done better than people thought he would do. And for Romney, if you've watched him speak, and I've watched him speak a lot in the last 18 months, really, he was quite good last night for Romney, if you judge Romney against Romney. I think the format was kind of interesting, and there was a lot of criticism. I was working for CBS last night, and there's a lot of criticism in the newsroom about Lair's handling of this, but I actually thought of you when I watched him, and I thought, well, this guy, he's great. He's actually a good debate moderator, but he's a very good interviewer, and I think he did what interviewers do last night when he noticed that if he just sort of stayed out of their way, that they might actually talk to each other and that we got something longer than the traditional soundbite answers you get in a debate, and there was actually some exchange.
Actually, he kept emphasizing these are real differences. I mean, and pointing that out, almost highlighting that. That was his role, clearly.
Yeah. They both went on a little too long, but is that a bad thing necessarily? I mean, they both got to talk a lot, and there was some substance to that.
I think it was only a bad thing in this regard, in that the debate was set up so that you had three segments on the economy and then three segments afterwards on health care, the role of government, and governing. And because
Lair, it was kind of all about the economy.
But because Lair let the economy control the first two-thirds of the debate, by the time you got to governing and how you're going to actually run Washington in the next 4 years, that was, you know, an exit question, basically. And that's at the heart of this election, if you ask me. It's whoever wins is going to have to turn around and deal with a very difficult Congress and a very dysfunctional system in Washington. And
agreed.
The two gentlemen didn't really answer that last night.
Well, and you have to – I thought when President Obama was given the opportunity to ask one question, he might have said but he kind of implied it, but he might have said something like, how are you going to change Obamacare and accomplish this the first day? I mean, at one point, he got in some points at least on that score, because, you know, Romney may be the next president, but he may have a Democratic Congress and vice versa.
Exactly.
That's right. And you're right, Bill. I mean, this is they should never have put that at the end. Lair, I think, did a very bad job. Lair was not a reporter. Lair was the person who should have asked about the 47% or the taxes or why Obama did the various things he didn't do. You know, many things that Obama was expected to do, he didn't do. Lair was not a reporter, and he was not there making sure that all the questions that people had got answered. And that should have been his job. His job was not just there to say, let them, you know, drone on and give the speeches they were preparing to give. I mean, the idea was to see what they said when were asked tough questions, and they weren't. They were not asked any tough questions.
At least you got Mitt Romney to admit that he likes Big Bird. I'm going to open the phone lines. there are many of you who have some responses to last night's debate, and if you do, please feel free to join us. We'd like to hear from you and like to hear what your thoughts are on it. And, of course, any questions you have, we have three veteran analysts with us, Joe Tooman and Bill Whalen, George Lakoff, and we welcome your involvement in the program. Toll-free numbers available, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. It's 866-733-6786. So feel free to join us by phone. Again, that toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Other ways to communicate with us, email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. You can also, of course, go to our Facebook page, and you can tweet us, and our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Before we get to the break here, Joe, I mean, you've been analyzing these debates for a long time and getting good analysis from all three of you, excellent analysis as I expected, but what kind of difference is it really going to make, especially if President Obama comes out swinging in the next one, which he probably will?
You know, that's a good question, Michael. Historically, these debates, actually when they began back in 1960 at the presidential level, served as a focusing mechanism for people who didn't really pay attention, voters, until after Labor Day. But with the elongation of the presidential election cycle, which is now 18 to 24 months before you actually vote, I mean, they start that far back, there's plenty of time for people to make up their minds. And that means that when we get to these debates, that the number of people who actually are the target audience, the undecided voters, is really a very, very small number. And even though, by the way, our CBS
okay,
poll.
Join us. We're going to a break. We'll finish when we get back. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about last night's presidential debate, the first of what will amount to three debates by presidential candidates and one other debate by the two vice presidential candidates, and what we learned from it and what impact it's had or will have on the election, who won and who lost. Bill Whalen's with us, research fellow from the Hoover Institution and veteran political analyst, as well as Republican speechwriter for governors here in California and political candidates. Joseph Tooman is professor of political and legal communications at San Francisco State and author of Political Communication in American Campaigns. And George Lakoff, Richard and Rhoda Goldman Distinguished Professor of Cognitive Science and Linguistics at UC Berkeley. And George has a new book out, The Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide to Thinking and Talking Democratic, and he'll be appearing Tuesday, the 24th, at 6 p.m. at the Mechanics Institute in San Francisco. Might as well, George, is that wrong?
No, that's not wrong.
Oh, okay. I thought you were hushing me there. Let me give the full, I'll be your PR agent here for a moment, because I know there are many people who would like to hear you talk about this book, and it's just off the presses. Wednesday, he'll be at the historic Hoover Theater in San Jose at 6:30, and Thursday, the 26th, 7:30 p.m. at the Bookshop, Santa Cruz, in Santa Cruz.
I've been at Hoover Theater in San Jose.
Okay, we'll get those correct, and we'll mention them at the end of the hour. So he's not appearing there, unless he's going to send a surrogate and reappear, which is not the case. Joe Tooman was sort of opining on a debate again before we went to the...
Yeah, I'll very quickly finish the point that I was making. So Bill was mentioning at the beginning of the hour, we're waiting to see the polls. Last night, the other network that I work for, the national network did do an Instapoll of 500 undecided voters. And it was sort of interesting results. Among undecideds, about 44% felt that Romney had been the superior debater and had changed their opinion of him. About 22% felt the president had done better. And then whatever's the left, something over 30% sort of said that they thought it was a tie. Those numbers suggest that Romney had a better night with undecideds. But the real question is how many undecideds are left? My guess is going to be
they're
talking about single digit.
Maybe. Yeah.
And in the battleground states in particular where it matters, is it that significant? So your question originally before we went to break is it going to matter? And I have to say I really agree with what Bill said. I think the president had an off night. He can recover. There's still two more debates. If you're Mitt Romney, rejoice that you had a good night, but don't read too much into it. If you're the president, work harder next time around and don't read too much into it. There's still a bit to go before this election is over.
When you talk about swing states, though, I immediately think of my home state, Ohio, and, of course, states nearby like Michigan, and wondering why didn't President Obama say it was your plan not to help the auto industry? It was your plan to let them go on their own. I mean, he said that a number of times on the campaign
trail. Michael, for heaven's sakes, why did he credit Romney's plan in Massachusetts and keep saying he did all these things so wonderfully and making him look good? I mean, he had an off night. You could count 15 mistakes that Obama made simply by the things he didn't say. And the answer is, and I've been in his shoes before as a candidate, sometimes you have an off night. He had an off night.
Yeah, George Lakoff, you wanted to?
Well, I think it was worse than that. I don't think he just had an off night. I do think he can recover. I think that they're right about that. But there are undecideds, and they do matter in this campaign because there are very close states here. And what is somebody who is, quote, undecided? It's somebody who is sort of conservative in some ways and progressive in other ways. And in the same brain, that is possible because of what's called mutual inhibition. The activation of one moral system inhibits the other, and depending on which one is active. Now, the question is, how do you activate a moral system? And you do it by saying what you believe about moral values. Romney did that last night, and Obama did not. Obama talked policy, 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 but he never activated the progressive moral values that he actually has that lie behind the policies. He didn't talk about why those policies, why those numbers, etc. And as a result, he allowed Romney to get more of those folks who are undecided by allowing Romney to activate their conservative views.
So I'm assuming from what you're saying, it's up to the president now to win that thin margin of people or whatever that number is back.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting here, Michael. The next debate is October the 16th, and it's a town hall. I think it's on Long Island, if I'm not mistaken.
He does better at those.
In New York, yeah.
Well, in theory, he should. And you're going to see a different set of muscles in play in the second debate because it's a town hall. It's sitting on a bar stool, not standing behind a podium, and it's a question of when you get off the stool and walk into the crowd, and do you hug somebody, do you pat them on the back?
And so the questions come from the audience.
And that's the other thing. The questions are going to come from the audience. So, you know, what are the factors in the second debate? Well, empathy. relatability, and I suspect you're going to see a lot of different things talked about. The economy will come to play, but we're probably going to have a discussion about women. We're going to probably have a discussion about minorities. We're going to have a discussion about societal drift and the middle class and government and so forth. So in theory, this should be a better forum for Obama. But again, the question is, can Romney rise to this? And I will repeat this again. Romney had a great night last night, no question about it. Tactically, he got everything and more than he could ask for coming out of it. But if he doesn't shine in the October 16th debate, he's back in the ditch on the morning of the 17th.
Of course, he was able to show some of that empathy last night when he was talking. He was using actually a presidential technique, saying, when I talk to this woman here, when I talk to this person there.
What Reagan did in 1980 in the Carter debate, if you go back and look at that. He talked about people he personally met on the campaign.
Exactly.
Well, let's find out what our listeners have to say, and we'll go to our calls. By the way, you can join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. If you have some thoughts or reflections about last night's debate, we'd like to hear them. You can, of course, post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or go to our Facebook page, or tweet us, and our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. First caller, Terrell, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you guys so much for actually talking about the debates last night, and just wanted to see with your guests if they noticed how President Obama really looked like he suffered what Nixon did when he first started to debate against Kennedy, how he started to clench his jaw a lot. He looked a lot older after being in office for the last 4 years, and that's something that Romney was able to excel at by looking like he was a young, more energetic individual. And I don't know if your caller, if your guest noticed that as well. Is this something that's important for President Obama to deal with in the next debate, or is that something that Romney should continue to keep up if he wants to keep the momentum?
Joe Tumman, what do you think?
Well, we spoke about this earlier. I think the president is always kind of, his nickname in 2008 was low drama Obama. He's, you know, very low affect, low blood pressure kind of performance. Measured. Pardon me?
Spock, they were calling him.
Spock, you could call him that, definitely. And he's and there are people who have asked, is this a calculation on his part so that he doesn't look angry and upset all the time, or too energetic? He doesn't want to look like Al Gore in 2000. You know, I know the answer. Or is it just who he is? And I actually think it's who he is. I think there's a lot of pressure in his life. I think that's – he's probably still a smoker, I'll bet. And but he manages to keep it submerged. The problem was that style wasn't – it only works if you're on your game and you're on top of your facts and you can push back when somebody's – when you have to call your opponent. And he didn't do that last night. And Governor Romney was on his game, as I said before. So the contrast didn't work well. And I think what the caller is also saying by his question is there's a visual component to these debates. I mean, that's why, it's, as George said, it's not a high school debate. The broadcast nature of this changes it. And the president, who's usually very telegenic and really translates on television, didn't do that last night. And Governor Romney, even with his moist-looking eyes last night, looked like he'd been crying before, did, frankly. He came across, I think, more authentic.
There was a kind of almost sour expression on the president's face.
Yeah.
There was, you know, in that Nixon debate, by the way, in 1960, Nixon had wrenched his knee before the debate.
He had
a knee injury.
Yeah.
He had gout. He was actually in physical pain on the stage, and it showed.
But there was also the shadow from his
there was. But unless the president wrenched his knee before the debate, I'm not sure why he had the persimmon look on his face.
Well, he should know, since he plays basketball, that he should be ready for his game.
That's it.
And we go to more calls. Let's hear from Kim in Marin. Hi, Kim.
Good morning. Love the show. Love NPR. I felt like the off night was not just Obama's, but it was Lear's. I felt like if he wasn't the sort of the pivot of the event, then it got off balance almost immediately, and Romney just filled that void and interrupted, and it was, I found him a little off-putting with his shiny eyes. I also would, if I were a true dyed-in-the-wool conservative, I would have looked at my candidate last night with a real raised eyebrow, because I felt like he had pivoted away from almost every point he had when he was running so hard for this role, and I would feel like I'm standing on a float, not knowing where the shore is, because he seemed to be right, like you said, shooting for the middle. And then the other thing I would ask your panel is, who would you have had him prepare with instead of John Kerry?
That's a very good question. But let me come back to the first point with you, Bill Whalen. that whole sense of just Romney, mean, I think her first point is well taken here, don't you?
Yeah, it is. But conservatives last night wanted to see Romney be the aggressor and take it to Obama.
He wasn't throwing on the red meat he was during the campaign, though. He was moving.
He wasn't. But this is, again, how perception can trump reality. The reality is he did not have a stridently conservative message, but the perception is that he was fighting against Obama, and that's what counts for conservatives right now. They want to see the fighter.
And what about those who were training the fighter? I guess it was Portman in Romney's case, but it was John Kerry in Obama's.
John Kerry was ridiculous. Look, if you're going to be a fighter and float like a butterfly, you better sting like a bee.
Words that we can constantly hold in our consciousness.
Well, at least Obama didn't salute.
Let's get Jack on here. Jack, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you, gentlemen. You know, prior to last night, I was completely just not into Romney at all. He went on there, and yes, he was a bit aggressive, but if we use the analogy of a job interview, then, you know, he really wanted the job, and I really felt as if Obama didn't. And I just really, really felt that Obama, just like you said, did not bring his A game, of course, but it just really felt that Obama let Romney just take it from him. And it was just really embarrassing to watch. And I am looking at Romney a lot closer now. And I know he flip-flops on a lot of things. If he can just keep his message on a certain plateau now, I'm just afraid that, you know, Obama blew it last night. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you for the call. Now, here are some different views coming in by email. Here's Eugene, who says, until Democrats are willing to attack and knock the stuffing out of the failed voodoo trickle-down economic policies of the Reagan era that have been regurgitated by Republicans since, they'll look just like Dukakis, Mondale, and now Obama. The really sad issue is that once again Mitt Romney, Republican, was able to stand up and tell bold-faced lies to the American people and not be fiercely challenged, a la Reagan, Bush, and Bush 1 and Bush 2. But Malcolm says, apparently those who think Romney won the debate saw a different one than I did. What I saw was an Obama-reasoned explanation of the facts, while Romney continued his list of dishonest platitudes, generalities, and threats against public welfare. John says, I suppose that, yes, Romney drove his way through and Obama didn't come through as we'd wish, but as I recall, the two closing prepared remarks were typically very different. Obama provided much actual, detailed, and vital concerns. Then Romney spoke his minutes with not a moment of actuality, just blowing his empty horn. Another listener says, perhaps Obama was exhausted last night from spending the day in the war room after tamping down the issues surrounding Syria bombing Turkey, while Romney was spending time with his groomers preparing for his 20th debutante ball. Sorry, I think expectations were so low on Romney that since he didn't do his normal gaffe of offending the majority of the listeners, we are all calling him the winner. He did fine at a debate. That doesn't make him presidential material. That's Eleanor. And Mark says, President Obama allowed Mitt Romney to present himself as a more centrist version of Obama himself. Where was the mention of the 47% comment, his stance on abortion, his outsourcing of jobs, his offshore accounts? Obama let Romney, the chameleon, change colors at will with very little challenge. George Legoff, nodding your head.
That's absolutely right. And what's particularly interesting was the first caller's comment about looking more closely at Romney. And I think you should look very much more closely at Romney, but you're not going to see it in Romney. Romney did exactly the sort of thing Reagan did. This isn't about policy wonk material. It isn't about the facts and figures. This is about whether someone cares about you. It's about what their moral values are. And Romney, you know, was not completely clear and straightforward about it. He was, you know, being, quote, centrist.
He kept saying, I care about the middle class. I care about those people out of work. I mean, he made that kind of italicized statement a number of times.
He kept saying he cared about them. But if you looked at his policies, he didn't. And if you looked at that 47% tape, he didn't. If you look at the many things he has said about what he believes liberty means in this country, he didn't.
But George, could I ask you a question, though? The one thing he did do with respect to that was he said repeatedly, I'm going to provide you 12 million jobs.
Right.
And that's coming right after I cure you. And the president never talked about that. And so even if, you know, and the president should have been questioning, are you really going to, you know, produce 12 million jobs?
But the president was talking about the number of jobs that had been created under his administration. Maybe he needed to look more forward and talk about what he was going to do with jobs.
Not only that, but you see the economists have said anybody's going to get you 12 million jobs. And that's the very first thing that the president should have said in reply. Look, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's you or me. You know, we're going to get at least 12 million jobs. The question is, how are we going to do better than that? Because the economy, as I've set it up, is going to produce 12 million jobs right now. And then the question is, you know, how do we do better?
Well, he did talk about jobs that would come through clean energy and through alternative forms of energy, but then Romney hit him really hard on Solyndra, which I suppose was anticipated, and on other spending of, nothing quite comes close to Solyndra, but other spending of that sort.
$90 billion on the green energy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, he threw out that figure, $90 billion.
By now, they're awfully familiar talking points coming out of the president's mouth.
Yeah. Let's go to more calls, and we go next to Mountain View. Nicole, hi.
Hi, good morning, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I definitely thought that Mitt Romney did do a better job speaking last night, but I like how Obama still talks to the audience. Like, I kept feeling that Mitt kept yelling at Obama and yelling at Lehrer, but Obama kept saying, this is the detailed plan, and looking into the television, which was something that I think made a difference for me.
Okay. We thank you for your observation, and we'll go right to another call, and that's Jane in Corte Madera. Good morning.
Thank you very much. Well, I have three comments to make. First of all, in today's Independent Journal, on page 812, there's a whole sheet of truth versus fiction. And one of the fictions was, according to the newspaper, is that the onstart, at the beginning of the program, or at the beginning of Obama's presidency, Romney asserted, there were 23 million people out of a job, and actually there were only 12.5. Out of a job. That's number one, and that's a tremendous difference as far as count is concerned. The second thing that bothered me is the reference to the health committee that Obama was talking about in his Obamacare. Sounded like Sarah Palin's death committee, and I'm sorry that Obama didn't speak to that and point out that with Medicare, which nobody wants to give up, there's no such thing, and compare his Obamacare with Medicare. And the third thing that really bothered me was when Romney went after him about gasoline prices. Presidents can't set gasoline prices, and that's what bothers me about Obama. I would like to hear more of what presidents can't do, because people are complaining that he can't do this and he can't do that. A lot of stuff he can't do without a Congress that won't support him.
Well, that's true for both presidential candidates. And thank you, Jane. It's also kind of mystifying to me, George Lakoff, why that $716 million out of Medicare kept being thrown around back and forth, and President Obama kind of just let it hit him.
Well, he actually answered it once. And that's the disease. The assumption is, if you're being rational and you say the fact once, that's all you need because everybody will get it. But they won't. You know, the lie repeated over and over is going to be accepted. And that needed to be said. At one point, I mean, Obama should have said, that's a lie. Straight out lie. Because it was a straight out lie. You know, here it is. You know, fact checkers, check it out afterwards. It's a lie, and here's the lie. You know, straight out. And then you can say, there's that lie again.
Much like Romney did when he corrected the president on whether or not there was, you know, a $5 trillion or $3 trillion. So many trillions last night, I lost count, whether it was a tax cut or not. And he kept saying, that's not what I'm for. And he repeatedly said that. And it got some traction. Now, whether he really is for it or not, I don't know. But he was more forceful in denying that than the president was going the other way.
So here's a question that I think the group needs to assess. What does Obama have to do in the next debate? He's going to have conflicting advice coming from his camp. There are going to be people saying, you now have to take the fight straight to Mitt Romney. And there are others going to be saying, wait a second, you're the president of the United States, and you're fundamentally a likable guy. You don't want to become the hatchet man in this election. So I posted this to you, to my colleagues here. What exactly should Barack Obama do on the 16th?
He can do both in the following way. You can be negative by being positive, saying, I'm the honest man in this campaign. You know, that says you're a liar, right? And the basic thing, there's a lot of ways to be negative by being positive. And he also has to say what the moral differences are between them. This isn't just about the middle class, and it's not just about economics. That wasn't brought up. You know, he has brought this up before, that what is success is not financial success in this country. Success has to do with doing something hard, doing it well, contributing to the country, to your community, to your family in some significant way, and most Americans do that. Most Americans are part of this success, and they're not earning the amount of money they should be. there is a problem about wages in this country, and that needs to be said out loud, you know, about this not just being about financial success. That is a big thing. He needs to come out and say what the moral differences are, number one, and in that, by saying positively what he believes and what policies follow from that, then it follows instantly, you know, what the differences are. You know, the positive thing can be an attack if it's done right.
Well, let's get Umesh on here. Umesh, thank you for waiting and join us on Forum.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. I think one of the main points that that the president scored was the fact that he is going to lower the taxes and about Medicare, which is what is really important in the battleground state. So I would I think that's what I feel.
What do you think?
I think
Medicare,
that most Medicare is important, and Obama didn't make it clear what a voucher program is. And none of the Democrats have, except for Biden, was good about the coupons.
Well, he started hitting on vouchers.
He spent some time on that last night.
Romney was quick to fire back and say, look, I'm not talking about people who are – everybody now on Medicare is going to have Medicare. I'm talking about a younger generation, and voucher gives them options, and, you know, why should they be – not given that.
Can I answer that question in a different way? I think that one of the things that and this goes back to – I'll fold in an answer to a couple of questions that your listeners have asked today. Romney was the governor of Massachusetts, you know, a state that went for George McGovern in 1972, a Republican governor, and he wasn't the first Republican governor, but you can't get to be the governor of Massachusetts if you're really not a moderate. He's a fiscal conservative and a social moderate, or he had been before. And when you run for president in the Republican Party, you cannot get the nomination if you run that way. So in the primary, big surprise, he ran to the base, he ran to the right, but he's in the general election now, and there aren't enough Republican voters to put him in the White House if he doesn't get independents and disaffected Democrats. So of course he's coming back to the middle. And that means on issues like Medicare that he's not going to take ridiculous positions on this, will alienate the vast majority of the population. He might say things like that to donors in a conversation that gets recorded and get him in trouble, but we didn't hear that last night. He's going to sound like a centrist. And for people who thought that wasn't authentic, it may not be, but it's what you do to get elected. If you're a Republican and the far right turns out to vote in the primaries and you can't become the nominee without sounding like you're more conservative than you are, and then come back to the middle in the general election.
Well, I was just thinking about in Ohio where they're running ads of Mitt Romney when he was running for governor, standing in front of coal-burning plants and saying, this will not go on, you know, this sort of thing. I mean, sounding like an environmentalist. President Obama, whenever Medicare came, I mean, how many times did he mention the AARP? I mean, it was like he was talking like Claude Pepper or something.
Well, he kept saying that you know, yeah. Well, but that's a mamba jamba of an advocacy group. Let me tell you, seniors vote, they give money, and they vote in lockstep on issues that affect seniors.
I've heard it described many ways, but never as mamba jamba.
Well, you do not mess with the AARP.
That's right.
Let's get Joanne next. Joanne, join us.
Hi. Thank you. Or in any of the debates, are the issues that make me really uncomfortable, like Romney's and the Republican stance on a woman's right to choose and gay marriage? It doesn't seem like those issues are going to be discussed in any of the debates. And those are the things that make me, and I can't imagine a lot of other people in the country, really cringe. And I love you, Michael. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
The first debate, the caller should understand, last night's debate was programmed for economics, health care, and then government. The third debate is all program for foreign policy. The next debate, though, is a town hall meeting with undecided voters who get to ask questions. And I would be shocked if a question about abortion does not come up, about women's health issues, just the various, you know, controversial things we've seen in the past.
They'll come up, but they're also about economics. The point about this is that it is via the budget. If you look at Ryan's budget, Ryan is saying, and the Republicans have used the budget on all social issues. So they say we're going to defund anything that has to do with Planned Parenthood or sex education and so on. So it is an economic issue. It's a budgetary issue, and that wasn't made clear last night. It wasn't made clear that economics matters for everything.
On we go to more calls, and Mel is joining us next. Mel, you're on.
How wonderful. That's a wonderful segue. Economics is everything, and yet they didn't talk about the key economic issue, and that is you have hundreds of millions of workers overseas who are just as capable as American workers and are willing to work for a lot less. How can you possibly expect Americans to get jobs? They talk jobs, 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 but they simply don't realize that Americans won't compete in the world market, and they just don't produce anything. Just look at the products that you have around you. Nothing is made in America, and they didn't talk about that at all. The whole discussion is way off center. They are missing the whole point of the problem in America and the sacrifices Americans will have to make in this world economy. You guys are simply way off center.
You know, I think this is probably I think this probably gets back to what George said earlier about Jim Lehrer, and that at some point Jim Lehrer should have brought up the global marketplace. He didn't talk about technology last night. Here we are in the Bay Area, not a word about technology. So this is just something that the moderator dropped the ball on.
I agree, and moreover, there are occasional times when numbers matter. The unemployment rate for people with college educations is 4.6%. 4.6%. The major unemployment problem is for people without college educations.
That's right.
That was never brought up. And those people need to be able to get those college educations, which means you have to be able to afford college, and you have to build up more colleges and better schools.
How many hours could we spend on things that weren't brought up that should have been brought up? I mean, that itself is very telling.
The question is, how many hours did the Obama campaign spend on things that weren't brought up?
Well, let me extend thanks to all of you for the excellent analysis here. Bill Whalen, research fellow for Hoover, and George Lakoff, who is Richard Rhoda Goldman, Distinguished Professor of Cognitive Science and Linguistics at UC Berkeley, and Joe Tooman, who is Professor of Political and Legal Communications at San Francisco State. And let's plug their books again. Joe's book is Political Communication in American Campaigns, and George Lakoff's just pretty much hot off the press, A Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide to Thinking and Talking Democratic. I want to thank you, our listeners, and remind you that you can continue this discussion either on our Facebook page or on our website, going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated in the evening. Another hour of forum is coming your way. Don Lattin, religion writer for many years for the San Francisco Chronicle, is going to talk to us about his new book, Distilled Spirits. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our producers are Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our interns are Bradley Davis, Reva Gold, Nora McCartan, and Gina Shalaba. And our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, thank you again for being with us. And for all of us, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.